serious. Something awful and terrible happened in there, David. And if you ever tell anyone, even your ma and dad, may Jesus make you blind. That's the kind of talk my folks can't stand. But I got it from Grandma Preston herself. Ma says Jesus don't go around making anyone blind, but Grandma Preston always used it as a warning. And she went to church Sunday morning and evening both. David's eyes about to pop out of his head. What? He asks again. You know Judd Travers? He was murdered? No, but you know the way he's mean to his dogs? He killed one of his dogs in there? No, let me tell it, David. You know how he's missing a dog? Yeah? Well, it come up here on its own, and I let him stay. I built him a pen, kept him secret, and named him Shiloh. David stares at me, then at the blood in the pen, then back at me again. Last night, I tell him, Baker's German Shepherd jumped the fence and tore him up. We took Shiloh to Doc Murphy, and Judd don't know. David's mouth falls open and hangs there. Wow, he says, then says it again. I tell David how hurt Shiloh was, and how we've got to wait till tonight to see how he is. And then we go in his pen together, and David helps me clean up the blood, pull up all the grass with bloodstains on it, and throw it over the fence into the woods. It's easier somehow with David helping, with David knowing even. If it was me by myself, I'd be thinking again and again how this never would have happened if Shiloh could have got away from the shepherd. I look at David and think we're friends for life. Then I think of how there are exactly 7 people now who know I have Judd Travers' dog, and it's only a matter of time before somebody lets it out. Probably Becky. She'll warble it to the first person coming up the lane. Did you ever notice how the more a little kid tries not to tell a secret, the sooner it gets out? Nothing that child can do about it. The secret is just too big for a little kid. What I didn't expect was that at 3:30, before Dad come home, here's Doc Murphy's car chugging up the lane, and he's got Shiloh in the back seat. I'm standing out by the oak tree with David, taking turns on the bag swing, when I see the car and Shiloh's head raised up in the back seat. I'm over to that car in 3 seconds flat. Shiloh! No cry ever sounded so happy as the one that come up out of my throat. All of us were crowding around the car. Ma and Daryl Lynn and Becky and David Howard, and all of us are saying, Shiloh, here, boy, and holding out our hands, and Shiloh's trying to lick everything in sight.
Patient recovered faster than I thought he would,
Doc says, getting his big belly out from behind the steering wheel and standing up.
So I figured I'd bring him on over myself.
And then the mother.
Had patients coming in and out today and don't know that I wanted them to see the dog.
She nodded. I'm going to pay for this, Doc Murphy, I tell him. You send the bill to Dad and he'll pay it, but then I'm paying him.
Well, son, that's a generous thing to do, with the dog not even yours,
he says. Is he all well now?
No, not by a long shot. Think it's going to take a couple of weeks to heal, and I can't promise you he'll walk without a limp. But I got him sewn back up and full of antibiotics. If you can keep him quiet for a few days and off that leg, I think he'll pull through just fine.
If Ma was mad at me before, she's not now. Not the way Shiloh's licking her all over both arms, getting a quick lick in at her face every time she bends close. Becky's sticking her hand out for Shiloh to lick, and when he does, she squeals and pulls back. Shiloh's tail going like crazy. It's like a welcome home party. Ma has me bring in this cardboard box from the shed, and we put an old pillow in the bottom of it and cover it with a clean sheet, and Doc Murphy lays Shiloh down inside it. Shiloh seems to know he can't walk too good, because as soon as he tries to stand up, he sits back down again and licks at his leg. I'm glad Shiloh's back. I'm glad he's going to get better, and that we can keep him till he's well. But the more I sit there petting his head, feeling his happiness, the more I know I can't give him up. I won't. Sure seems strange having Shiloh in the house that night, after trying so hard to keep him secret. Strange, too, the way Ma takes to him. Seems like she can't hardly pass his box next to the stove without reaching down to pet him, making low sympathy noises in her throat way she does when Darylin or Becky or me get sick. Dad don't say much. He come home to find Shiloh there. He just stands off to one side, listening to what Doc Murphy said about him. He don't get close enough for Shiloh to take a lick. But when supper's over and I go off to the bathroom to brush my teeth, I peek back through the doorway, and Dad's over by Shiloh's box, letting him lick his plate clean. Dad crouches there a minute or two, scratching all down Shiloh's back and up again. What I'm figuring, see, is by the time Shiloh's better, everybody will love him so much they just can't let him go, even Dad. I'm hoping Dad will go over to see Judd Travers, make him an offer for Shiloh, and then it'll be ours. The trouble with this kind of thinking, though, is we don't have the money. I'll probably be through junior high school almost before I earn enough to pay Doc Murphy's bill. To buy Shiloh from Judd, even if Judd's willing to sell, I'd have to collect aluminum cans all through high school, too. Can't make very much with cans. I try to think about what other kind of work I can do that would pay me more. But except for delivering the county paper on Friday afternoons, nothing else comes to mind. And somebody's got that job already. It's sort of like Shiloh's there, and he's not. In the next couple of days, everybody's petting him every chance they get. Becky feeds him the crusts off her toast, breaks off little bits, and shrieks every time she feels Shiloh's mouth slurp them out of her fingers. Ma's putting up beans in jars, and all the while she hums to Shiloh like he's a baby in a cradle, not a dog in a box. Darylin's got an old hairbrush, and she just can't seem to brush that dog enough. Even Dad sits down one evening and gets out every tick Shiloh's got on him, takes a little dab of turpentine and rubs it on the tick's rear end, and the tick backs out of Shiloh's skin mighty quick. The thing that makes it seem like Shiloh's not there is that nobody except me and Darylin and Becky talks about him. Ma and Dad don't even once mention his name out loud, as though saying it makes him ours, which he ain't. As though if you don't talk about him, maybe he'll disappear as quietly as he come that day in the rain. What everybody's waiting for, I guess, is something to happen. Every day, Shiloh's getting a little stronger. 2 days after Doc Murphy brought him here, Shiloh's up limping around on his bad leg. Ma put some papers beside his box for him to do his business on, but he won't. So for the first couple days, I pick him up, carry him out to the yard, and after he's done his business there, I bring him in again. But now, he's pushing open the back screen himself, and going down into the yard, then coming back and tapping on the screen with one paw so we'll let him in. Somebody, sometime, is bound to see him. Becky, sometime, bound to say something. Even David Howard, when his ma came to pick him up the other day, opens his mouth right off and says something about Shiloh. "Who's Shiloh?" she asks. And David realizes he's let it slip. "Old stray cat," he says. And now I've got David lying. Worst part about having Shiloh here in the house where I can play with him any time I like is that it's hard to leave him when I go out collecting cans. But I've got to earn money now more than ever. So each day when Shiloh takes his long nap, I sit out with my plastic garbage bag hanging out one jeans pocket. One day I walk all the way to Friendly and ask at the grocery, where the county papers dropped, if they'll put in my name as a carrier. Mr. Wallace says he'll turn my name in, but he's already got six names ahead of me, and one of them is a grown man with a car. Don't see how I can match that. I study the bulletin board at the back of the store where people put up notices. Stand on one foot and then the other reading the whole dang board, and seems like everybody got something to sell or want to be hired. Nobody wants to buy. Only two jobs listed, one for an appliance salesman and some woman who wants her house painted. Mr. Wallace sees me looking at the board, and he comes over and takes down the notice about a woman wanting her house painted. "That's already taken," he tells me. That night, while we finish supper, Shiloh's going around the table, putting his nose in everyone's lap, looking mournful, waiting for somebody to slip him something to eat. I can tell Ma and Dad's trying their best not to laugh. Ma won't let us feed him at the table. What I'm dying to ask Dad is, did he tell Judd Travers about his dog being here? Dad don't mention it, so I don't ask. Maybe I don't want to know, I tell myself. And then, just as Ma's dishing up a peach cobbler that we're going to eat hot with milk, I hear a sound outside that makes my bones feel like icicles inside me. Shiloh hears it too, and I know right away it's what I think it is, because Shiloh sticks his tail between his legs, puts his belly low to the floor, and climbs back into his box. Ma and Dad look at Shiloh. They look at each other. Then there's the slam of a truck door outside. Footsteps on the ground, footsteps on the porch, and a rap, rap, rap at the back door. Everybody stops eating, like we was all froze to death in our chairs. Dad gets up and turns on the porch light. And there he is. Judd Travers, looking as mean and nasty as I ever seen him look. He don't even ask when he come in. Just opens the screen and steps inside.
"Ray Preston," he says, "somebody told me you got my dog."
Dad's looking serious. He nods and points toward the box by the stove.
"Over there, Judd, but he's hurt. We've been taking care of him for you."
Judd stares at Shiloh and then at Dad.
"Well, I'll be danged," he says, almost softly. "Somebody knows my dog is missing, takes him in, and don't even have the decency to tell me."
"We were going to tell you," Dad says, and he's looking straight at Judd.
"Nobody wants to hear his dog's been hurt, though, and we wanted to make sure he was going to pull through."
Then he turns to me.
"Marty," he says, "you want to tell Mr. Travers how his dog come to be here?"
He knows I don't. He knows I'd rather swim a river full of crocodiles than face Judd Travers. But it's my story to tell, not Dad's, and he always did make us face up to what we'd done. "Your dog come over here twice because you've been mistreating it," I say, and my voice don't sound near as strong as Dad's. Sort of quavery. I clear my throat and go on. "So, second time it come over, I built it a pen up in the woods and Dad didn't know it, and that German Shepherd of Baker's got in and fought Shiloh."
"Fought who?"
"The Beagle. Shiloh. That's what I've been calling him. And Shiloh got hurt bad. It was my fault for not making the fence higher. We took him to Doc Murphy and he patched him up." Judd Travers is still staring around the room like he never saw the likes of us before. Finally, he lets out his breath through his teeth and slowly shakes his head.
"And I got to find out all this from Doc Murphy."
I couldn't believe Doc would go tell him.
"Somebody goes to the doc the other day and sees a beagle lying out on his back porch. Tells me about it later. Says he thinks maybe the dog's mine. So I ride over to Doc's this evening, and he tells me it was you who brought him in."
Judd walks across the kitchen, and at the thud of each footstep, Shiloh huddles down farther and farther in the box, like maybe he can make himself disappear. His whole body is shaking. Ma sees it, I know, because she watches for a minute, then turns her face away quick. Judd stares down at Shiloh, at his bandage and the shaved place where he's all stitched up, the rip on his ear.
"Look what you done to my dog," he yells at me, eyes big and angry.
I swallow. Nothing I can say to that. Travers squats down by the box. He puts out his hand and Shiloh leans away like he's going to be hit. If that don't prove the way he treats him, I don't know what would. But Judd's saying,
"I never mistreated my dogs. This one was shy when I got him, that's all. I sure never caused him an injury like this one. Wouldn't never have happened if you'd brought him back like I told you."
I close my eyes. When I open them again, Judd's putting his hand on Shiloh's head. Rough-like, sort of patting him, and you can tell he ain't got that much practice being kind. Still, hard to prove Shiloh wasn't mistreated before he got to Judd's. How do you go about proving something like that?
"It was wrong of Marty to pin up your dog, Judd, and we've already talked about that," Dad says. "He's the one who's going to pay Doc Murphy for patching him up, and soon as the dog is strong, we'll drive him over to your place. Why don't you let us keep him until then, in case he needs more care?"
Judd stands up again and looks at me. I stare back, but I don't say nothing. And then Ma can't take it anymore. She says, "Judd, Marty's got awful attached to that dog, and we'd like to know how much you want for it. Maybe we can scrape up the money to buy him." Judd looks at her like she's talking some kind of nonsense. Like we are all getting crazier by the minute.
"That dog's not for sale," he says. "Paid good money to get me a hunting dog, and he could be one of the best I've had. You want to keep and feed him till he's better, okay with me. It's you that got him all tore up, and you paying the bill. But I want him back by Sunday."
Screen door slams again. Truck starts up, and then he's gone. I'm back to not sleeping again. Everything I can think of to try, I've already thought on and turned down. Even thought of Dad and me driving to Middleburn and going to the county courthouse to report a man who's mean to his dogs, thinking maybe they wouldn't let Judd have Shiloh back again. Dad says that's where we'd have to go, all right. But how am I going to prove it about Judd? Think about that, he says. I've been thinking about it. Do I really suppose they'd send an investigator all the way out from Middleburn to see about a man said to kick his dogs? And if they did, do I think Judd's going to tell the man, yes, indeed, he does kick them? Do I think the investigator's going to hide out in the bushes near Judd Travers' place for a week just to see for himself? Tyler County hasn't hardly got the money to investigate reports of children being kicked, Dad says, much less dogs. Even if I told the animal rights people that I found a dog with a bullet hole in its head up near Judd's house, don't prove that Judd was the one who killed it. I go out to talk to Dad about it some more while he's chopping wood, and he just says,
Son, it's hard, I know, but sometimes you just got to do what has to be done. It's Judd's dog, and there's no getting around it.
Ma tries to make me feel better. She says at least I brought some joy and kindness into the life of a dog that never had any before, and that Shiloh will never forget me. But that even makes it worse. Wish he could forget. Keep thinking of how Shiloh's going to look at me when we drive him over to Judd's, and my eyes fill up again. Becky, she's been crying too. So has Daryl Lynn. The one good thing about it now is that the whole family loves Shiloh, and we can talk about him out loud. But there's not one thing we can do. 3 more days and we have to give him up. I walk down to Friendly on Friday to talk with David Howard. David feels almost as bad as I do. I hardly finish telling about Shiloh and he's got tears in his eyes already. David Howard's 30 pounds heavier and bigger than me, and he still don't care who sees him cry. I've been thinking, David, I say. You got relatives in Ohio, don't you? He nods. You think any of them would take Shiloh? Could you call them up and ask could they drive down here tomorrow and take him back with them and all tell Judd we let Shiloh out one day and he never come back? More lies. But David's shaking his head already. It's only Uncle Clyde and Aunt Pat, and she's allergic to dogs. They had one once and had to give him up. On the way back home, I'm thinking about some place really good I could hide that dog. The old grist mill, maybe, up by the bridge. The door's padlocked, but it don't take much to get in, 'cause the top of the building's open where some of the roof's blown away. I bet I could hide Shiloh in there for 10 years and he'd never make a sound. But what kind of life is that? Couldn't ever take him anywhere except after dark. Even then he'd be so close to Judd's place, the other dogs would probably sniff him out. Slowly, the minutes and hours of Friday tick by. Then it's Saturday, and our last day with Shiloh. We give him every little treat we can think of. I wonder we don't make him sick. And after supper, we sit out on the back porch like we usually do. Becky and Daryl Lynn are rolling around in the grass, and Shiloh limps out there to join in the fun. I show Becky how if you lay down on your stomach with your arms up over your face, Shiloh will work to turn you over. Both girls have to try it, and Shiloh does, just like I said, trying his best to get those girls up on their feet. If Becky ever fell in the creek, I'll bet Shiloh would pull her out, Ma says. If I ever saw a snake, I'll bet Shiloh would kill it for me, says Daryl Lynn. I got a sadness inside me growing so big I feel I'm about to bust. That night I sleep a little bit, wake a bit, sleep a bit, wake some more. About dawn, however, I know what I got to do. I get up quiet as can be. Soon as Shiloh hears me, of course, he's out of his box. Shh, Shiloh, I say, my finger to my lips. He watches me a moment, then crawls back in his box, good as ever. I dress, pull on my sneakers, take me a slice of bread from the loaf on the counter and a peach off the tree in the yard. Then I take the shortcut through the east woods toward Judd Travers. It's the only thing left to do. I talk to Dad, to Ma, to David, and nobody's got any more idea what to do than they did before. What I'm fixing to do is talk to Judd Travers straight and tell him I'm not gonna give Shiloh back. Rehearsed my lines so often I can say them by heart. What I don't know, though, is what Judd's going to say. What he's going to do. I'll tell him he can beat me, punch me, kick me, but I'm not going to give that dog up. I'll buy Shiloh from Judd, but if he won't sell and comes to get him, I'll take Shiloh and head out in the other direction. Only way he can get his dog back is to take me to court, and then I'll tell the judge how Judd treats his animals. Halfway through the woods, I'm thinking that what I'm about to do could get my dad in a whole lot of trouble. Around here, it's serious business when you got a quarrel with your neighbor and you got to carry it as far as the law. Folks ain't that fond of Judd, and most of them likes my dad. But when it comes to taking a man's property, I figure they'll side with Judd. I'm not making life one bit easier for my parents or Darryl Lynn or Becky, but I just can't give up Shiloh without a fight. Will he shoot me? That thought crosses my mind, too. Some kid got shot down in Mingo County once. Easy as pie for Judd Travers to put a bullet hole in my head, say he didn't see me. I got my feet pointed toward Judd Travers' place, though, and they ain't about to turn back. Still so early in the morning, the mist is rising up out of the ground, and when I come to a stretch of field, looks like the grass is steaming. Sky's light, but the sun hasn't showed itself yet. You live in hill country. It takes a while for the sun to rise. Got to scale the mountains first. I'm practicing being quiet. What I hope is to get to Judd's house before he's wide awake, taken by surprise. He sees me coming a half mile off without Shiloh. He's likely to figure what I got to say and have his answer ready. I want to be sitting there on his porch the moment he gets out of bed. A rabbit goes lickety-split in front of me, then disappears. I went out hunting with Dad once, and he said that when you first scare up a rabbit, it hops a short way, then stops and looks back. That's when you gotta freeze. Can't move nothing but your eyeballs, Dad says. What you have to look for is that shiny black dot, the rabbit's eye. If you look for the whole rabbit, you almost never see him because he blends into the scenery. So I don't move a muscle and look for the shiny black dot. And there it is. I wonder what's going on inside that rabbit, if its heart's pounding fierce. No way I could tell it I wasn't going to do it harm. So I go on, back into the second stretch of woods, heading for that second field. I'm just about to come out of the trees when I stop dead still again. For right there in the meadow is a deer, a young doe. She's munching on something, and every so often she stops, looks up, then goes on eating again. Hardest thing in the world for me to see how anybody could shoot an animal like that. Then I think of a couple winters ago, we hardly had any meat on our table, and I guess I can see how a father with three kids could shoot a deer. Hope I never have to, though. I'm just about to step out into the meadow when crack! It's the sound of a rifle. It splits the air and echoes back against the hills. The doe takes out across the meadow, heading for the woods. Its front legs rear up, then its back legs as it leaps, its tail a flash of white. Crack! The rifle sounds again, and this time the deer goes down. I can't move. One part of me wants to go to the deer. The other part knows that somebody's out here with a rifle shooting deer out of season. And before I can decide whether to go on or turn back, out of the woods on the other side steps Judd Travers, rifle in hand. He's wearing this army camouflage shirt, a brown cap, and the weirdest grin that could fit on a human face.
"Ooh-wee," he says, holding the rifle up with one hand as he plows through the weeds. "I got her. Ooh-wee."
I know he wasn't out shooting rabbits and happened to get a doe instead, because he doesn't have his hounds with him. Judd Travers had gone out that morning with the clear intention of getting himself a deer. I also know that if the game warden finds out about it, Judd's in big trouble, because a deer he shot out of season wasn't even a buck. He slogs over through waist-high weeds to where the doe lays. Bending over, he looks at her, walks around her a little piece, then says, "Ooh-wee," again, soft-like. That's when I come out of the woods. He's got his back to me now, his hands on the doe's front legs, trying to see can he pull her himself, drags her a little way and stops. And when he looks up again, I'm right beside him. He whirls around.
"Where'd you come from?" he says.
"Was on my way over to see you," I tell him. And for the first time, standing next to Judd Travers, I feel taller than I really am. He looks at me a moment, like he don't know if he's glad I'm there or not. Then I guess he figures me being there, only a kid don't matter.
"Look what I got," he says. "Found her eating in my garden this morning, and I chased her over here."
"That's a lie," I say. "I was back in the woods watching her eat. She was coming down from the hills the other way. You went out deer hunting for anything you could get."
"Well, supposing I did,"
says Judd Travers, and he hates me worse than snot. "Deer ain't in season, that's what," I answer. "There's a $200 fine for killing a doe." Judd Travers is staring at me like he's about to crack me across the mouth. Way we're raised around here, children don't talk back to grown folks. Don't hardly talk much at all, in fact. Learn to listen, keep your mouth shut, let the grown folks do the talking. And here I am, shooting off my mouth at 5:30 in the morning to a man holding a rifle. Am I crazy or what?
"Not unless the game warden finds out there's not," Judd says. "And who's going to tell him? You?"
All at once I realize I got Judd Travers right where I want him. One way you look at it, it's my duty to report a killed doe. The way folks up here look at it, though, that's snitching. And if I might could tell, but bargain not to, it's something else again. It's blackmail. But like I said, I'd got to the place I'd do most anything to save Shiloh. "Yeah," I say, my heart pounding like crazy. "I'll tell. There's a free number to call." There is, too. It's on Dad's hunting regulation papers. Boy, I sure didn't know I was going to step into all this when I come up here this morning. Now Judd's looking at me good, eyes narrowed down to little slits.
"Your pa put you up to this?"
"No, this is me talking."
"Well, ain't you something now? And who's to believe you?"
"I'll get the game warden up here, show him the spot the doe was hit, the blood. When he finds a deer at your place, he'll believe me." The words are coming out quicker than I can think, almost.
"I'll tell him he was eating my garden."
"And I'll say different. The new game warden won't make any allowance, even if the deer was eating your garden. You just don't shoot deer out of season, no way. Especially a doe." Now Judd's really angry, and his words come at me like bees.
"What you trying to do, boy? Start up trouble? You think I can't put you in your place mighty quick?"
"So what you gonna do?" I ask. "Shoot me?" Travers is so surprised, his jaw drops. But I'm cooking now. Nothing can stop me. Braver than I ever been in my life. "Gonna shoot me like that dog I found up here 6 months back with a bullet in his head?" Travers stares some more. "I know whose bullet that was, Judd. And I told Dad. And if folks find me up here with a bullet in me, Dad'll know whose bullet that is, too." I can't hardly believe the words that's coming out of my mouth. Been scared most of my life of Judd Travers, and here I am, half his size, talking like a grown person. It's because I know Shiloh's still got a chance.
"So what you waiting for?" Judd says finally. "Go get the game warden."
And when I don't move, he says,
"Come off it, Marty, here. You take one of those legs, I'll take another. We'll drag it to my place, and I'll give you half the meat. And don't tell me your ma won't be glad to get it."
"I don't want the meat. I want Shiloh." Now Judd's really surprised and whistles through his teeth.
"Boy, you just come up here to set me up, didn't you?"
"Didn't have an idea in this world you was out with your rifle," I tell him. And that's one of the first truths I told in 2 weeks. "I come up here because it's Sunday, the day you said to bring your dog back, and I wanted you to know you got to fight me first to get him. Now I'm telling you, I mean to keep him. And you expect to keep that deer without a fine? You'll make the trade."
"Whoa," says Travers. "That's no kind of trade at all. If I hadn't got me a deer this morning, what would you have bargained with then?"
I didn't have an answer to that, because I hadn't been thinking about a deal. Judd had already said he wouldn't sell Shiloh. Judd's eyes narrow down even more till it almost looks like he's asleep.
"I just bet you would tell the game warden, too."
"Jesus' name, I would."
"You're saying if I let you keep my hunting dog, you're going to keep this deer a secret?"
I begin to see now I'm no better than Judd Travers, willing to look the other way to get something I want. But the something is Shiloh. "Yes, I will," I tell him, not feeling all that great about it.
"Well, you got to do more than that, boy, because I paid $35 for that dog, and I want $40 to let him go."
For the first time, I see a thin ray of hope that maybe he'll let me buy Shiloh. "I'll get you the money somehow, by and by," I promise.
"I don't want the money by and by. I want it now."
You haven't got it now. You work for me and pay it off. You make a deal with Judd Travers, and you're only 11 years old. You take what you can get. But all I'm thinking is dog. You got a bargain, I tell Judd. And now my feet want to dance. My face wants to smile, but I don't dare let the delight show through.
Hey, listen here, says Judd. I'll pay you $2 an hour, and that comes to 20 hours to earn $40. And the work ain't easy.
I'll do it, I say.
Beginning now, says Judd.
And I can tell he's getting a bit edgy, that someone else might come through the field, wondering about those rifle shots, and see how he got a doe.
Help me get this deer to my trailer.
I'm so glad to be getting Shiloh, I can hardly think straight. But I'm thinking straight enough as I help drag that doe to Judd's to know that by letting him get away with this, I'm putting other deer in danger. He kill this one out of season, he'll figure maybe he can kill some more. To save Shiloh, I'm making it harder for deer. I swallow. All I got to do, though, is think of the way he'd look at me. I ever give him back to Judd, and then I get on with my job. When we get to the trailer at last, we carry the deer around to the three-sided shed Judd's got in his backyard. First thing Judd does is bleed the doe, keep the meat from spoiling. Then he goes out and messes up the tracks with his foot, kicking up the grass where we'd matted it down, and covering the trail of blood with dust.
I get home from work every day at 3, Judd says, and I want you here when I pull up. You work for me 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. I want that wood back there stacked. I want the weeds cut and the grass mowed. I want my beans picked, the corn hoed. Whatever I think of to be done, that's what you do. And I want you here starting tomorrow.
I'll be here, I says, but I want it in writing that after I do 20 hours work for you, Shiloh belongs to me. Travers grunts and goes in his trailer. He comes out with a piece of grocery sack and the words, Beagle Hunting Dog to Marty Preston for 20 hours of work. J. Travers. It occurs to me suddenly that maybe after I do the work, he'll try to pay me off with one of his other dogs. Write Shiloh, I tell him. He gives me a pained look and crosses out Beagle, writes Shiloh in its place, but don't spell it right, leaves off the H at the end. I take the paper and put it in my pocket. I'll be here tomorrow, I say.
And you ever tell anyone about this deer, boy? You're going to be more than sorry you open your lips.
You got my word, I say, which considering all the lying I'd been doing lately didn't seem like it amounted to much. It did, though. I walk away from Judd's trailer in a sort of zigzag line, half expecting a bullet in my back any moment, even though I'm pretty sure he wouldn't. Soon as I'm out of sight, though, I race through the woods, heart going thumpity-thump. Can't keep the smile back no longer. Shiloh's mine! The words keep coming back again and again. He's safe! Should feel even more joyful, though. Thought once if I could just get Shiloh for my own, it would be the finest day of my life. In a way it is. In a way it isn't. Could be. Judd gave in because he couldn't think of nothing else at the moment to do. Said I could have Shiloh just because he needed some help with that deer. Could be that once he got rid of the evidence, he'd tell me to go ahead and get the warden, that I wasn't to have the dog. Could even say he never wrote that on the grocery sack, that I'd wrote it myself. I don't think so, though. What worries me most is that Judd could go through with the bargain, give Shiloh to me, but then someday, when Shiloh's running free in the woods by himself, Judd might put a bullet in his head, just to spite me. Closer I get to home, though, the bigger the grin on my face. And when I burst in the kitchen, I got a smile from ear to ear. Dad's having his coffee, and Ma's in the living room listening to the Sunday morning service by Brother Jonas. She watches him every Sunday at 7, which tells me what time it is already.
Where you been, says Dad,
and I can tell Ma's paying attention, too.
You up and gone? We got to worrying.
I slide into my chair and almost have to push my cheeks in to keep the smile from going all the way around my head. Went to see Judd Travers, I say, still breathless, and I'm buying his dog. Ma gets up and comes to the kitchen doorway. What?
Thought he wasn't selling, says Dad, looking at me hard. He wasn't, but I talked him into it.
He needs help around his place, and he says if I work hard for him for 20 hours at $2 an hour, that will pay the $40 he wants for Shiloh. Ma's smile getting broader by the minute. I don't believe it, she says. Shiloh's yours? Not yet, but he will be, and we don't have to take him over to Judd's. Before I can get the last word out, she's got her arms around me, squeezing the breath from my chest almost. I think Shiloh can smell Judd Travers on me. He can smell the deer's blood, too. I know by the way he sniffs my shoes, but finally he just can't stand it no more. He's joyful I'm back, and he's licking me, welcoming me home. But Dad's still studying my face.
I can't figure it, Marty. Judge seemed pretty definite about keeping that dog. What was said between you?
I really didn't want to lie no more. If I tell Ma and Dad everything except about the deer, that's lying by omission, Ma says, not telling the whole truth. But if I tell about the deer after promising Judd I wouldn't, then I would have lied to Judd. Rather lie to Judd than my folks. But I figure it this way. Dad wouldn't report Judd, even if he saw him shoot a doe out of season, because that's the way it's always been around here. That don't necessarily make it right, of course. But with him feeling that way, nothing's going to change if I do tell him about Judd and the deer. And because I promise not to, I don't. Right now, the most important thing to me is Shiloh. Told him I wasn't going to give Shiloh back no matter what, I tell Dad. They are sure staring at me now, him and Ma.
You said that to Judd Travers?
Dad asked, scooting back in his chair. Only thing left to say. Only thing I could think of to do, I hadn't tried already. Was going to tell him he could take me to court and I'd tell the judge how he kicked his dogs. But didn't have to go that far. Guess he needs help around his place. Ma turns to Dad. You know, I think it's because Shiloh was hurt. I think he figures that dog's never going to be what it was, and that's why he was willing to let it go. Figured he got rid of a lame dog and the best of the bargain, too. That's what I figure, I say. And at last Dad begins to smile.
So we got ourselves a new member of the family,
he tells me. And that's about the nicest thing I heard said in this house in my life. Then Becky and Daryl Lynn wakes up, sad-faced, because they think we got to take Shiloh over to Judd's. I tell them the news, and Daryl Lynn, she starts dancing. Becky joins in, whirling herself around, and then Shiloh smiling his dog smile, everybody whooping and carrying on. Ma turns off the TV and makes waffles with a big pad of margarine in the center of each one and hot homemade brown sugar syrup filling the plates. She even makes a waffle for Shiloh. We're going to make that dog sick if we're not careful.
Well, now all we got to worry about is how we can afford to feed him as well as ourselves,
Dad says finally.
But there's food for the body and food for the spirit. And Shiloh, sure enough, feeds our spirit.
We about pet Shiloh to death. Every time he turns around, somebody's got a hand on him somewheres. I take him out for his first gentle run since he got hurt. And once up on the hill, him running free, the good feeling inside me grows bigger and bigger, and I have to let it out. I hunts up my shoulders and go, hee-ow! Shiloh jumps and looks at me, hee-ow! I go again, out of joy and jubilation, the way they do in church. And suddenly Shiloh joins in with a bark, a pitiful kind of bark, like he's got to be taught how. But it's a happy bark, and he's learning. Only bit of sadness left in me is for the deer. Wondering, too, about whose business it is when someone breaks the law. Wonder if Dad wouldn't never tell on Judd, no matter what he done. Bet he would. There's got to be times that what one person does is everybody's business. Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock, I'm waiting on Judd's porch when he pulls up. All his dogs is chained out to the side of the house, and they get to barking like crazy. I don't try to get near them, because a chained dog can be mean. I've already restacked Judd's woodpile, but he wants me to do it again. Put the big pieces here, the little ones there. He is looking mean and grumpy. Like maybe he's disgusted with himself for letting me have that dog so easy. When I finish the woodpile, Judd hands me the hoe.
You see that garden?
I nod.
You see that corn? I want the dirt chopped up so fine I can sift it through my fingers, he tells me.
Now I see what he's getting at. He's going to make it so there's no way I can please him. I'll put in my 40 hours, and he'll tell me my work wasn't no good. He wants his dog back. I hoe till I got blisters on both hands, sweat pouring down my back. Wish I could do my work in the early morning before the sun's so fierce. But I don't complain. I take off my T-shirt finally, wrap it around my head to keep the sweat out of my eyes, and I keep on. Shoulders so red, I know they'll hurt worse than anything the next morning. And they do. Next afternoon, Judd sets me to scrubbing down the sides of his trailer and his porch, shining up the windows, raking the yard. He sits on a folding chair in the shade, drinking a cold beer. Don't offer me nothing, even water. I hate him more than the devil. My mouth's so dry it feels like fur. Third day, though, he puts out a quart jar of water for me when I go to pick his beans. I bend over them rows so long, dropping the beans into a bucket, I think I'm going to be bent for life. When I'm through, Judd sort of motions me to the porch, like I can sit there if I want while I drink my water. I almost fall onto that porch, glad to be in the shade.
Looks like you got yourself some blisters, he says.
I'm okay, I tell him, and take another long drink.
How's Shiloh? He asks.
First time he's called the dog by that name. He's doing fine. Still got a limp, but he eats good. Judd lifts his beer to his lips.
Would have been a good hunting dog if I could just have kept him home, he says. The other dogs never run off.
I think about that a while. Well, I say finally, each one is different.
That's the truth. Kick one and he just goes under the porch for an hour. Kick another and he goes off and don't come back.
I'm trying my best to think what to say to that. Like how come he is to kick them at all? Then I figure nobody likes to be preached at, no matter how much he needs it. Least of all Judd Travers, who is 30 years old if he's a day. Some dogs, it just makes them mean when you kick them, I say finally. Other dogs, it makes them scared. Shiloh got scared.
Never beat my dogs with a stick, Judd goes on. Never did that in my life.
I don't say anything right away. Finally, though, I ask, how your dogs doing?
Raring to go out rabbit hunting, Judd says.
We look over at his three dogs, all pulling at their chains and snarling at each other.
That biggest dog now, Judd goes on. He is the loudest squaller I got. I can tell from his racket whether he's following a fresh track or an old one. If he's running a ditch, swimming, or treed a coon.
That's pretty good, I say.
Littlest one, he's nothing but a trashy dog. He'll run down most anything except what I'm after. Hope the others will learn him something. And the middle dog, well, she gives a lot of mouth, too. Even barks at dead trees.
The dogs are fighting now, and Judd throws his Pabst can at them.
You all shut up, he yells. Hush up!
The can hits the biggest dog, and they all scatter.
Don't much like being chained, Judd says.
Guess nobody would, I tell him. I put in 10 hours that week, meaning I make up 20 of the dollars I owe him. Got one more week to go. When I leave of an afternoon for Judd's, Shiloh goes with me just so far, then he gets to whining and turns back. I'm glad he won't go on with me. Don't want him anywhere near Judd Travers. Monday the second week, it seemed like Judd's out to break my back, or my spirit, or both. This time he's got me splitting wood. I got to roll a big old piece of locust wood over to the stump in his side yard, drive a wedge in it, then hit the wedge with a sledgehammer again and again till the wood falls apart in pieces to fit his wood stove. Then another log and another. I can hardly get the sledgehammer up over my head, and when I bring it down, my arms are so wobbly my aim ain't true. I almost dropped the hammer. This ain't a job for me, and if Dad saw what Judd was making me do, he'd tell him it wasn't safe. But Judd's out to teach me a lesson, and I'm out to teach him one, so I keep at it. Know it takes me twice as long as Judd to split that wood, but I don't stop. And all the while, Judd sits on his porch, drinking his beer, watching me sweat. Sure does his heart good, I can tell. Then he says something that almost stops my heart cold, laughs and says,
boy, you sure are putting in a whole lot of work for nothing.
I rest my back a moment, wipe one arm across my face. Shiloh's something, I tell him.
You think you're going to get my dog just because you got some handwriting on a piece of paper?
Judd laughs and drinks some more.
Well, that paper's not good for anything but to blow your nose on. Didn't have a witness.
I look at Judd.
What you mean? You don't even know what's legal and what's not, do you? Well, you show a judge a paper without a witness's signature, he'll laugh you right out of the courthouse. Got to have somebody sign that he saw you strike a bargain.
Judd laughed some more.
And nobody here but my dogs.
I feel sick inside, like I could maybe throw up. Can't think of what to do or say, so I just lift the sledgehammer again. Go on splitting the wood. Judd laughs even harder.
What are you, boy? Some kind of fool?
And when I don't answer, he says, what you breaking your back for?
I want that dog, I tell him, and raise the sledgehammer again.
That night, when I'm sitting out on the porch with Ma and Dad, Shiloh in my lap, I check it out. What's a witness? I say.
Somebody who knows the Lord Jesus and don't mind telling about it, says Ma. No, the other kind.
Somebody who sees something happen and signs that it's true,
Dad says.
What you got in mind now, Marty?
You make a bargain with somebody, you got to have a witness? I ask, not answering.
If you want it done right and legal, I suppose you do.
I can't bear to have Dad know I was so stupid I made an agreement with Judd Travers without a witness.
What you thinking on?
Dad asks again, hunching up his shoulders while Ma rubs his back. Just thinking how you sell something is all. Land and stuff. Dad looks at me quick.
You're not trying to sell off some of my land for that dog, are you?
No, I tell him, glad I got him off track. But I sure am worried. Every trace of that deer's gone now. Don't know what Judd done with the meat. Rented him a meat locker somewhere, maybe. But there's no bones around, no hide. I report him now. I can't prove a thing. Next day, Judd Travers calls me dumb. Sees me waiting for him on his steps and says I must have a head as thick as a coconut. Didn't he already tell me that the paper wasn't worth nothing? I just look straight through him. You and me made a bargain, I say, and I aim to keep my part of it. What you want me to do today?
Judd just points to the sledgehammer again and doubles over laughing, like it's the biggest joke he ever played on somebody in his life. I can feel the sweat trickle down my back, and I ain't even started yet. 4 o'clock comes, and I finally finished all that wood. But Judd pretends he's asleep. Got his head laid back, mouth half open, but I know it's just another way he's got to trick me. Wants me to sneak on home. Then he'll say I never kept to my part of the bargain. So I go in his shed, put the sledgehammer back, take out the sickle, and go tackle the weeds down by his mailbox. Work on them weeds a whole hour, and when 5 o'clock comes, I start back toward the shed. See him watching me. I walk over.
Sickle's getting dull, Judd. You got a whetstone around? I could sharpen it for you.
He studies me a good long while.
In the shed,
he says. I go get it. Sit out on a stump, running the whetstone over the blade.
Past 5 o'clock, says Judd.
I know, I say.
I ain't gonna pay you 1 cent more, he says.
It's okay, I tell him.
Never saw a look on a man's face like I see on his. Pure puzzlement is what it is. Thing I decide on when I head for Judd's again the next day is that I got no choice. All I can do is stick to my side of the deal and see what happens. It's all in the world I can do. If I quit now, he'll come for Shiloh, and we're right back where we started. I don't want to make him mad. No use having a winner and loser, or the bad feelings would just go on. Don't want to have to worry about Shiloh when he's running loose and I'm in school. Don't want to feel the judge so sore at me he'll think up any excuse at all to run his truck over my dog. Only sign in this world we're making progress is the water Judd puts out for me. This day it even has ice in it. And Judd don't say one more word about a witness. In fact, when I'm through working and sit down on his porch to finish the water, Judd talks a little more than usual. Only bond we got between us is dogs, but at least that's something. I decide to say something nice to Judd. Tell him how good looking his dogs are. Giving a compliment to Judd Travers is like filling a balloon with air. You can actually see his chest swell up.
40, 30, and 45, he says,
when I tell about his dogs.
Those are their names now?
What I paid for them, he says.
If they had a little more meat on their bones, I figure they'd be the best-looking hounds in Tyler County, I tell him.
Judd sits there, turning his beer around in his hands, and says,
maybe could use a bit more fat.
I nurse my water along a little, too.
When did you first get interested in hunting? I ask him. Your pa take you out when you was little?
Judd spits. Didn't know a man could drink beer and chew tobacco at the same time, but Judd does.
Once or twice, he says. Only nice thing about my dad I remember.
It's the first time in my life
I ever felt anything like sorry for Judd Travers. If you weighed it on a postal scale, it would hardly move the needle at all. But I suppose there was a fraction of an ounce of sorry for him somewhere inside me. When I thought on all the things I'd done with my own dad, and how Judd could only remember hunting, well, that was pretty pitiful for a lifetime. Thursday, when I get there, Judd's meanness has got the best of him again. Because I can see he's running out of work for me to do, just giving me work to make me sweat. Dig a ditch to dump his garbage in, he says. Hoe that cornfield again. Scrub that porch. Weed that bean patch. But close on to 5 o'clock, he seems to realize that I'm only going to be there one more time. I'd worked real hard that day. Did anything he asked and done it better than he asked me to.
Well, one more day,
Judd says when I sit down at last with my water and him with his beer.
What you gonna do with that dog once he's yours?
Just play, I tell him. Love him. We sit there, side by side, while the clouds change places, puff out, the wind blowing them this way and that. I'm wondering how things would have turned out if it hadn't been for that deer. If I'd just knocked on Judd's front door 2 weeks ago and told him I wasn't giving Shiloh up, what would have happened then? To tell the truth, I think Ma's right. Judd would have sold him to me by and by because of Shiloh's limp. Judd's the kind that don't like that in a dog, same as he don't want a dent or a scratch of any kind on his pickup truck. Makes him look bad, he thinks. His truck's got to be perfect to make up for all the ways Judd's not. The last day I work for Judd, he inspects every job I do, finds fault with the least little thing, keeps pestering me, making me hang around, do my work over. When it's time to go, I say, "Well, I guess that's it then." Judd don't answer. Just stands in the doorway of his trailer looking at me. And then I get the feeling he's going to tell me I can take that paper he signed and use it for kindling. Tell me I can call the game warden if I want. There's not a trace of that deer left. The 2 weeks of work I put in for him was just long enough for rain to wash away the blood, for the field grass to spring back up again where the deer was shot. He still don't say anything, though, so I start off for home, chest tight.
"Just a minute," says Judd.
I stop. He goes back inside the trailer, me waiting there in the yard. "What am I going to say?" he tries that. "What am I going to do?" And then Judd's back in the doorway again, and he's got something in his hand. Comes down the steps halfway.
"Here," he says.
And it's a dog collar. An old collar, but better than the one Shiloh's got now.
Might be a little big, but he'll grow into it.
I look at Judd and take the collar. I don't know how we done it, but somehow we learned to get along. "Thanks a lot," I tell him.
"You got yourself a dog,"
he says, and goes inside again. Don't even look back. I get home that evening, and Ma's baked a chocolate layer cake to celebrate. A real cake, too, not no Betty Crocker. After dinner, Ma and Dad on the porch, four of us rolls around on the grass together. Daryl in, Becky, Shiloh, and me. Becky tries to give Shiloh her butterfly kiss, but he don't hold still long enough to feel her eyelashes bad against him. Just got to lick everywhere on her face. And long after Becky and Daryl in goes inside, I lay out there on my back in the grass, not caring about the dew. Shiloh against me crosswise, his paws on my chest. I look at the dark closing in, sky getting more and more purple, and I'm thinking how nothing is as simple as you guess. Not right or wrong, not Judd Travers, not even me or this dog I got here. But the good part is, I saved Shiloh and opened my eyes some. Now that ain't bad for 11. This is Peter McNichol. We hope you've enjoyed this Dell production of Shiloh by Phyllis Reynolds Naylor. This production was produced and directed by Robert Kessler. Music by Robert Kessler and Ethan Newberg. Production copyright 1992, Bantam Audio Publishing, all rights reserved. The book Shiloh is available wherever Dell Delacourt books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.